Welcome to the Swarmcast, an episodic look at the Southwest Ohio regional meta and the players within. We have tourney players, casual locals, gifted hobbyists, and many more. So come join us down the rabbit hole of Warmer Hordes in the southwest corner of the Buckeye State. Your hosts are Jerry Stonecipher, Aaron Jones, and myself, Mike Corka. All right, welcome to the Swarmcast. We've got myself, Mike Corkill, Jerry, and Aaron.
Hi.
And his little friend, Daphne.
Yes.
So how old is Daphne?
Daphne is seven.
Seven?
Yeah.
What is she?
She is a rat terrier chihuahua mix.
Rat terrier chihuahua.
Called a ratcha.
Interesting.
So she's kind of like, she loves you like a dog, but she acts like a cat. So it's cute, playful, and then she just wants to lay there and cuddle with you all day. So.
That's cool. So, Well, let's get started. Let's go ahead and get started with our normal format. It's going to be games first.
Yep.
Aaron?
I did not.
So you are going to be the guy that likes to talk about War Machine but doesn't play. I got to give you some grief, man.
Yeah, I know. I wanted to get some stuff in on the weekend, and scheduling just didn't work out with family stuff and everything.
So, Jerry.
I mean, hopeful.
Yeah.
I did manage to get a game in.
Hey, he got a game in.
My good, pretty much my final game with Grimkin for a while. I got in versus Ben, our local international player. He was playing, trying out Rhett and with CID going on right now, and he was playing Raven and Shadows of
Mage Hunters.
Yeah, Mage Hunters. All the Mage Hunters. Two units of Mage Hunter Strike Force, a unit of Infiltrators and the Spears. And
wait, he had Infiltrators?
Yeah. And they did some work that game.
Well, that's with Combo Smite on them, right?
That is with Combo Smite on them, and that's the Mage Hunters with magic weapons and combined range attack.
Oof.
Combined range attack needs to be removed. Spoiler.
Yeah, CRA plus the I can see whatever I want for a turn.
Well, I will put it this way: top of two in that game. He almost killed both of my Brightmares because I dropped Old Witch because hey, bunch of guns. Oh, his Jack was also the Hyperion. That was fun to deal with. But so yeah, lots of guns. So of course I dropped Old Witch. He almost killed both Frightmares. One Frightmare was in the armor aura and left her on like three boxes.
Ooh.
And just did a bunch of two-man CRAs into it. Dice minus fours.
Yep.
Mm.
If that was a Warjack, which I will point out, no, I don't think there's any Warjacks out there that are death 13, armor 16.
You've got some Signar Jacks that are death 13.
Okay, so even more so, okay, Signar Jacks are dying to these guys doing two-man CRAs.
Wow.
Because you're getting additional die on those rolls.
Sounds like a Signar list.
Yeah, that does sound like something Signar should get, right?
Or Crix, one of the two.
No, just Signar.
Yeah, Crix just whips you to death.
Yeah.
Anyway, he managed to, at one point, get the Hyperion on the Hyperion and the Spears on the Skid and Moans that was on that side, and left the Skid and Moans on three boxes.
How do you leave the Skid and Moans on two boxes when you're punching at it with a Hyperion?
One for the charge, one to boost that initial, and boost the second initial. I was also had three corpses on him and was in the Death Aura, so defense 13, armor 21, dice plus two because he did the
He did concentrated power.
He did concentrated
dice plus
power.
Two.
Dice plus two. I mean,
he should have.
There was, I think, one low roll in there.
Okay.
But yeah, he left it on a few. I just went ahead and just cranked the Grimkin dial, gave him Enrage, Curse of Shadow, the Hyperion, and healed him up the two boxes that I needed. And he left it on 10 boxes. The two Gremlin Swarms by him walked up and did the other 10.
Hey.
One rolled a 1, the other one rolled a 6. So
hey.
10 damage in total, took it off the table.
Yeah.
I screwed up the placement, and I ended up not being able to score the 1 point. End of the game. It was actually a very close game overall. He was left with a lot of infantry, but not enough to be able to kill the Skin and Moans and Cage Rager I had left.
Yeah.
Problem was that he dominated a side and was winning on control points. He ended the game with about 3 seconds on his clock with Scenario.
Yeah, I can see that.
So, very close game, and very happy that that was the sort of game I ended Grimkin on. I finally had finally took a loss to my winning streak with them since coming back.
Yeah. So, I got two games this week. I got a game against Jacob Green and a game against Jason Crosby. So, Jacob was playing Gorshade 1. Is that the one with the Banes?
Yes, Gorshade 1's the one with the Banes. Yeah.
So, I played into Gorshade 1 into Scourge. So, two units of Satixis Raiders, one unit of Ambushing Blood Witches, a Leviathan, I think.
Two stalkers.
Yeah. I mean, it was a pretty decent list. And we sat there and we played it out. My positioning, I was really not trying to win the game as much as trying to really focus on my positioning.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much I held off his army up until, I think, turn 4 or 5.
Mm-hmm.
Where he just was able to score the scenario points he needed to stop me. I could not get my Gremlin Swarms where I needed to get them because it was just feeding into his army because all the Satixis Raiders have magical weapons.
Yep.
And they can hit a Gremlin Swarm rather easily with a game.
Mm-hmm.
So, pretty much, I mean, I pretty much held off that army, including the ambush, and never allowed him a chance to feat. So I never had to deal with those Banes.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a really good game. I mean, really stretched my positioning muscles against him. And then I played into Jason Crosby. And that game ended in a technical win for me, but it was more of a draw. So Time-wise, he took a lot of time on his turns. I had less models to activate and plus less headspace to take up because I've been playing Dark Menagerie for a while. So pretty much I was doing 10 minutes turns to his 20 minute turns. So we ended it at the top of 5.
Mm-hmm.
With pretty much, doing the math in my head, I would have got him on time, you know, top of 4. And then the unfortunate thing happened is his phone, top of 5 in the middle of his turn, died. Just a reminder for everyone out there using War Room, if your device dies in the middle of an event and you cannot bring it back within a reasonable amount of time, so meaning like, you know, 3 to 5 minutes, which is going to be on your clock,
mm-hmm.
then you forfeit the game automatically. So
it's possible you also just forfeit anyway if the War Room didn't save
exactly
the latest information.
Exactly.
So I always keep a spare battery, an external battery, mm-hmm. and just have it hooked up to my phone every time I'm playing.
Yeah.
Yep.
But I got to, but his list was an interesting list because it was a Xerxes 2 list that I dropped Old Witch and Dark Menagerie into.
Okay.
He had a Gladiator, a Sentry, 2 Savages, a Reaver, Cyclops Reaver. It was an Exalted theme, so he had a full unit of Exalted, 2 Ancestral Guardians, and Hakkar.
So, did you just bring Old Witch yesterday, or...?
That's all I brought.
Okay, I was going to say, it's like, why did you drop Old Witch into that?
That's all I brought, but also I wanted to get some games with her just to see the difference. To my credit, I think, you know, going into the matchup with only having a 40% chance of victory, and I was able to pretty much stymie it out to turn 5. Really helped out. It was a lot of positioning. Mm-hmm. My biggest problem was I could hit everything, but when I was rolling to do damage, you know, I'm rolling stuff like, you know, 4-1-1 on a boosted damage with dice off 2 or dice off 1. Just all night long, that's pretty much what I was rolling.
That was me with the skin and bones into the Hyperion. I was rolling about 4s or 5s on average at dice plus 4.
Yeah, I mean, I'll take it for what it is. I mean, the biggest problem I had was the fact that I couldn't get any corpses off the beast that I was killing because of Death Rager. That was silly, stupid. So pretty much, Death Rager says you kill the you disable the beast. The beast gets to make an advance and attack, and then it's removed from play.
Yep. So, no corpses for you.
Yep, no corpses at all. So I'm like, I'm doing work and I get nothing. I'm doing work and I get nothing. So it's like, oh, this
sounds
is
about
rough.
Right.
I mean, it was good because I was able to do a lot with the witch. I mean, she was able to blind stuff. She was able to, you know, I messed up on my feet. I should have feeded a turn before. But I thought I didn't pre-measure, which is bad. I should have. Mm-hmm. But I thought I had bad skin bones in it. And I was just an inch out. So I was like, yep, Parallax got me. But other than that, I mean, it was a really good game. I was happy to play into it. But yeah, Scorn has always been one of those, if we haven't had it in the meta for a while now, that's why I keep giving Jones a hard time.
Now it looks like we have 2 Scorn players in our midst.
So you don't need me.
Yeah, we need you.
Oh no, we need you, whether you're playing Scorn or not.
You need to be part of the meta, dude. So, hobby-wise, have you gotten anything done, Jones?
Yeah, I got my Desert Hydra put together.
Okay.
But you already had that put together.
No, that was from the dead episode that we lost.
Got it.
That was the lost episode.
Yeah.
The lost episode.
It looks like I had a Uno Swordsman I was going to put together. They didn't have arms on, and I think I actually have... It's a plastic kit. And I have the option to turn them into Kel'Tari.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of a little discussion, if you don't mind. Should I go with 1 Kel'Tari, 3 Swordsman units, or 2 of each?
Honestly, probably 2 of each. I find rarely do I run 3 units of a single unit. And that's saying something. I love running spam. But when it comes to units, 2 is usually where I stop at, just for the versatility of that third unit being something else.
Because if someone has the answer to the 2 units, your third unit is just going to get eaten up.
Yeah, it's just dead in the water.
Which, there's a lot of answers out there for it.
Yes.
Something as simple as, you know, like the covering fire templates off of a storm wall, or a mana core, or the stuff off the, what's the Kador... gun.
Conquest?
Yeah, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. To Scathers from Ravagors and stuff like that. If you had 3 units of dudes, single wound infantry like that, you're pretty much stuck trying to walk around it. And so I used to agree with Jerry, you know, 2 is the most I would go. And, you know, with Grimkin not having that many options, you know, it's easy to go, well, if I just do 3 Dreadrots, but it's like, I would look at it and go, no, I'd rather have X. I'd rather have, you know, I'd rather have Trapperkin. I'd rather have Murder Crows. I'd rather have Nayslayers. Just more variety to use.
Because you're just increasing your toolbox at that point.
Sure.
Yeah. So, Jerry, you get anything hobbied?
Not yet. My my big box of Crucible Guard is late, so haven't put anything together yet. I'll be getting that in this week. So I will have that together and be playing on Tuesday.
Okay. Yeah, I've got some serious painting to do over the next 3 nights to try and finish up. I've got a Cage Rager completely done.
Very nice.
And I've posted it up on a Grimkin Facebook group. I've got my skin and bones to finish up. I just got to get the basing finished, get them resealed. And then I've got to get the Kravitz finished, and the Death Knell, the Gremlin Swarms, and Old Witch. at least some paint on them.
Mm-hmm.
Because Saturday I'm going up to North Olmsted to play in their OWC qualifier.
Very nice.
So,
well, here's hoping for you.
That's right outside Cleveland.
So I've been there before.
Yeah.
On a job. So
recess
I'm
games.
Familiar. Nice.
So pretty much a plan for me and Wes Roller is we're going to go up. I'm going to drive over to his house Saturday morning, get in with him, and then drive up. He'll drive up the rest of the way. And so him and I were kind of talking, and we're going to record a bonusode on the way up there with nice. Wes. So pretty much it'll be me and Wes riffing on tournament stuff going up there.
You can get a nice debrief on the drive back.
Yeah. And then I'll put it all together, and, you know, we'll have something to talk about and go through and put out, you know, with our experiences of the day.
Nice.
I find that I like traveling on tournament days because on the road up, you're sitting there just talking and spitballing all sorts of ideas, strategies, what you're going to run into,
mm-hmm.
what you got to remember. It gives you a little time to get your head into that, you know, tournament mindset. And then on the way back, it's debriefing time. You get to hear what the other person ran into. If you guys ran playing to the same player, you can kind of see what happened, where you went wrong, where they went wrong, or where they went right and you went wrong, or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the things I really enjoy about, you know, getting out on the road and traveling to a lot of these outside tournaments. Mm-hmm. So I'm just trying to get my painting done before then. So now Jerry's getting his Crucible Guard.
I am.
And that's going to be the topic of the night. So, Jerry, what is Crucible Guard with our meta going to do? Just a generalized high level, what's it going to do in our meta? You've got your veteran players like Ben, Jake, Edge. You've got your newer players out there. You got your intermediate players. What kind of questions is Crucible Guard going to really ask? What is it going to force us to think about?
Honestly, I think it's going to force you to think about what order balls are going to come up in. Crucible Guard is very good at being able to pinpoint a target and just debuff it, or buff the friendly unit and just destroy what it goes into.
Okay.
So at least on my end, target prioritization, as well as activation orders are going to be very important for me to be able to learn. So I think with the meta, trying to find ways of tripping me up in terms of order of activation issues will be a huge thing. If I'm not able to get my Dragonfire rocket off, well, the unit that's nearby is going to have a harder time dealing with the main target it wants to shoot into.
Right.
If the suppressors aren't able to walk up and put down their rust sprays or their ice cage sprays, then I'll have issues hitting or damaging as a result. So
so a lot of debuffs, a lot of buffs.
Yes.
Order of activations. Is there a lot of movement shenanigans in Crucible Guard?
There can be, especially when you deal with the Rocket Men. Okay. One of the Rocket Men's unique orders gives them +2 speed, which they're already speed 7, so it's speed 9.
Okay.
And reposition 5.
Okay.
It's also gonna def skew is gonna be something the meta's gonna have to deal with also with these, because you're looking at Rocket Men being pretty common. They are def 14, and they have their UA gives them an order where it's +2 defense and immune to blast damage. You're dealing with defense 16 Rocket Men that are immune to blast damage.
Thank you.
Sylvestro can give one unit an additional +2 defense.
Yeah.
That's about all he gives them, because they're flying, so they don't care about the Pathfinder, and they don't have any melee weapons, so they don't care about the strength. But
yeah,
having a full unit, a full 14-man unit of guys just coming into your face that are def 18 immune to blast damage is not going to be fun times for some people.
Yeah. So, speaking of some people, what factions are you looking forward to putting the Crucible Guard and really just running roughshod into?
I'm not entirely sure right now. It does, as with most things, very rarely does a faction have a boogeyman faction. They tend to have boogeymans in forms of specific casters or playstyles. So, faction-wise, I really don't have anything that pops out into me of what I want to see or what I don't want to see.
So, playstyle then. What don't you want to see? What do you want to see?
Stealth can be a bit of an issue, at least right now. So, mass stealth will definitely trip me up at points. High def can also be issues because we actually don't have a lot of... We have a lot of ways of dealing with high armor, but not necessarily high def.
Okay.
Sylvestro has his transmutation spell, if thrown on a unit, which he still has to hit that unit, an enemy unit, can provide -2 def, but that's about it.
Okay.
Everything else is... Oh, also, I take that back. We do have the field alchemists.
Okay.
And they have AoE 3 ice cages they can just throw around. So there are means of doing that, dealing with some death. But you're talking about, for one turn, pretty much being able to go up and throw those around before they die.
So what's the breaking point on death? So death 15, 16.
If we're talking about just being able to get one ice cage on a model, we're looking at probably about the death before ice cage, around the death 14 range. So that's still the range most people have.
Right.
Starting to run into issues with, or average about. We don't have any mats. Don't have any mat 7 units.
Okay.
I don't believe. So you're looking at eights. On 14s, I'm needing 7s. Actually, I take that back. The assault troopers are mat 7.
Okay.
So you're looking at needing 7s to hit a def 14 model before you get an ice cage on it.
Yeah.
So def 16 is probably about the range. 15 or 16 is around the range that it becomes difficult to hit things.
Yeah. Okay. So high arm, how high does it become where you can't deal with it anymore?
Well, so we have... trying to think here. So, well, let's go with the casters that I'm currently going to be running for the next couple months until my main casters come out.
Okay.
Sylvestro is a Focus 7 caster. Speed 6, Strength 6, Mat and Rat 6, Defense 15, Armor 15.
Right.
He has some various field alchemists, but in terms of what you're looking for, he has his signature spell, Transmutation. You can either throw it on an enemy unit, and they suffer -2 strength, death, and lose Pathfinder.
Okay.
Or you can throw it on friendly units and gain those instead. So +2 strength, death, and Pathfinder.
All right.
His feat is super signs portents.
Yep.
So he friendly faction model is going to additional die and attack and damage rolls, and I get to choose what die to drop. And we have several crit effects in this army, so chances are on that turn it's going to be crits galore.
Yep.
if they hit. So in terms of optimal being able to just deal with armor, you're looking at the assault troopers start at a PAL 13. If they charge, they go to a PAL 15.
Right.
He brings them to PAL 17. If it is a living model, the fire breath, the dragon fire rocket, will hit it at -2 armor.
Okay.
So you're looking at PAL 19, I believe.
That's
now.
Not bad.
And if it's a warjack, you can go up and rust it with the suppressor.
Right.
So again, you're looking at about pound 19 on a 5-man unit.
Okay.
But that unit is speed 5 with 2-inch reach, so predictable threat ranges for right now.
Right.
Any
stealth in your army?
Not really the only stealth. Technically, the alchemists have prowl, and they are able to put down smoke bombs. Right. So they can
stealth themselves,
but their armor 11. So yeah. Most blast damage will just kill them regardless, and they're one wound models. So they die like no one's business. And Gorman is a friendly faction model, so there's stealth there.
Yeah.
Elsewhere, no real stealth.
Okay, so your defensive tech is pretty much buffing your death.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have armor buffs?
There is one armor buff in the form of Gearheart, but he does not come out for a while. He's actually not even slated for release yet.
Okay.
He has D-Cell, so +2 armor.
Against range?
Against range and magic attacks. Okay. The other thing, though, is our medium-based infantry are resilient to shooting. They are def 11. The assault troopers have... they're def 11, armor 16, and the assault troopers have Ashen Veil, so they get concealment. Okay. The big thing is they're walking around with carapace.
Yeah.
So, armor 20 against shooting, and when Gearheart comes out, armor 22. So, they're the resilient ones to shooting. As I said, the rocket men get up to def 16, immune to blast damage with the UA, so... There are ways for us to get up to for the faction to be able to get up the table from a shooting heavy list.
Okay, so weaknesses. What you don't want to see a lot of people with stealth.
Anything that can mitigate defense in some way, whether it's pop and drop from Krios or Bloody Bartimus, additional dice to hit, such as from Scar 1.
Yeah.
Just anything to pretty much negate my high defense, or in the case of dealing with carapace, additional dies on damage rolls, high strength guns, though I think the highest strength gun is a POW 15 or 16?
16.
POW 16, so you're looking at dice -4, and I imagine that gun's on a boostable.
Yeah, so, it'll be on a boostable chassis. I mean, you're talking a Signar Defender.
So, yeah, you're looking at a boostable POW 16, I guess an armor 25 box model. That is pretty much killing it one a turn, at least. Granted, Sylvestro does have revive, and the second part of his feat is every time a enemy model is destroyed his control area, one friendly faction model gets to heal D3. So, there's some play there. Really, it's just a matter of hitting my head against the wall to see what works and what doesn't. I don't think I've really figured out Sylvestro yet. He's a toolbox caster, and I've never been great with toolbox casters.
Okay.
I've always preferred the beatstick casters, which is why I want Gearheart to come out as soon as possible so I can play my boy.
Yeah. So, how many... So the question is how many games are you going to play with each of these casters before you start trying to get into an event?
Honestly, I've never been the type of person to be like, I'm going to play this caster X amount of times to get the practice and figure out the list. I've just been more of a wing it. I've gone into tournaments with lists where I have played the casters 10 plus games. I've gone into tournaments where I've never even played the casters or the lists.
Wonderful.
That one was fun.
No, I bet.
Last time I did that was, I think, actually Mark II, when I decided to just say screw it and played my mercenaries, and I dropped McBain.
So, in Crucible Guard,
yes.
How long are you going to stay in there?
I will probably stay in it, similar to what I did with Grimkin here. Probably be playing it for the year. Then when Infernals come out, I'll probably be hopping into that. Given the last trends for the past year or two, I'm probably going to be the guy that's going to be playing the new mini faction that's coming out.
Okay.
So our meta will always have the latest toys being in our playing field.
Yeah.
And I will have the previous toys also in reserve for anyone who needs the games.
Okay. So I kind of want to revive a topic that we lost on the last episode is one of the things I really wanted to talk about for our meta is events and what you should be bringing and how you should be preparing for events. So one of the things that I want to really point out is when you're going to an event, you're going to have fun, but at the same point, wherever your skill level is, there is always that chance. The chance mm-hmm. that you really have a good day, chance you really have a bad day as far as whatever dice goes, whatever decisions making. The biggest piece of advice I can give anyone in our meta to sit there and think about is, you know, just try and go through the event and relax and enjoy it. Try and let go of anything that's tilting you at the moment. Now, what you can do is, for me, I believe in helping myself and helping my opponents. So one thing I'm starting to do with my Grimkin is I'm putting my deafened arm, my base deafened arm, on the models so they can see it. And then I also number my models on the back so I know which one is number one and which mm-hmm. one is number two. But the big one that I mean, get online, there's a PDF that looks kind of like targets. That is a arc marker.
Yes.
And mark your arcs. That's yep. the big one.
That is a huge thing, because your opponent might be used to how unmarked bases are dealt with, while you might be thinking of another. I know for me, when I'm marking my bases, I actually always have the head facing the center mark. I don't do shoulder to shoulder or anything like that. It gives it more of a dynamic pose by having the center of the front arc be where the head is pointing.
Yeah.
So when I'm looking at my opponent's models and I don't see that, I tend to use the head as a marker. But most people, standard rule of thumb is shoulder to shoulder is the line.
Yep. And see, for me, as a tournament player, I really hate playing into people without arcs, because mm-hmm. models get turned around, models mm-hmm. get whatnot, and you lose track of where all the models' facings are.
Yep.
You know, for what I do is I will sit there and I actually paint my arcs. One yep. color for the front, one color for the back, and there's no question my facing is.
I do the same thing. I tend to do a dark color on the back, a lighter color on the front. Makes it easy to, when I'm putting down the numbers and stuff like that on the back, to easier to see it.
Yep.
So I usually use white paint to do that.
Yeah, and the real big key about that is you're not only helping yourself, you're not only helping opponent, but you're also helping the TO when you do
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
Because when he has to come over and adjudicate, he can sit there and grab the laser, shine it over and go, oh, hey, look, the angle goes this yep. way, yep. you have no line of sight. You know, he can adjudicate it rather well, or she can adjudicate it rather well and rather quickly. For myself, I'm going to the next step and putting down the base arm, deafened arm on all my models, because it's one of the things of, I realized in my last tournament of, I had a player just kept asking me the same question repeatedly, and it was starting to get mm-hmm. into my head. It was really starting to take time away from my other thoughts. So I decided that this time around, I'm going to sit there and kind of make life a little bit simpler for myself and for my opponent.
Yep.
When he goes, hey, what's your deafened arm? They can see it right there on my base.
I have been thinking about doing that for a while. I'm probably going to do that with my Crucible Guard and probably go back to my Grimkin, because that is a huge thing going for the Grimkin models.
I mean, just think about how much time you lose.
Mm-hmm.
If, you know, you and I are playing Jerry, and it's my turn, I'm moving up, but you're trying to plan your turn, and you ask me, what's the deafened arm on that model? What's the deafened arm on that model? What's the deafened arm on that model? You know, it starts eating away at the time. It stops my thought process.
It's why, for me at least, why I love War Room, because what I'll do is I'll have the active card collection be that faction. So that way it's like, okay, I want to know the defense and armor on that unit. Pull it up while my opponent's taking his turn. It's like, okay, they have that spell. Bring up the caster real quick and see what spell it is in case there's any changes there.
Yep. And see, that's one of the real keys about, you know, trying to clean up my play is just looking it up on my own.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes there's too much happening on the table where I have to ask my opponent. But if I can sit there and take one thing away from, okay, if I'm going to ask questions, I should be prepared to help them be mm-hmm. able to see the board state as well as they can. Another one is if you're going to do anything where there might be a question of whether you have it or not, get out the widgets, get out the sticks, get out the proxy basis, and measure it. Get the lasers out. If you don't have a laser, go ahead and ask anyone around the room if they have one. I guarantee you someone has a laser. If you're in our meta and you want to get a good laser, I would go with Gadzooks Gaming. That's where I've been getting lasers for the meta. And those lasers are really nice.
They
have some great customer service. And, you know, just get the lasers, get the proxy. I mean, even if it looks like to you that you have it, but it could be possibly contested, get the proxy base out.
Mm-hmm.
I had a, with Jason last night, there was a charge that to me looked like a banana charge because of the shape of the forest.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to, he basically picked up his model and moved it. And I said, well, okay, we're having a casual game, but just next time, please. That was so close that I can contest it and say it looked like a banana charge. And when the judge comes over and sees the board state, he has the possibility of being able to sit there and go, well, no, you wouldn't have had it. So it's one of those things. I really want, you know, a clean game. If you kick my butt and it's a very clean game, hey, I'm happy about that. But if you kick my butt and it's been a sloppy game where, you know, I can't confirm where your movement is, I can't confirm any of that is, I'm going to be tilted. And I personally, after last couple times, I've decided that, you know, if there's any questions, I will have to live up to my middle name a little bit more and really be a dick about it and go, hey, no, judge, he didn't measure that, he didn't measure this, he didn't measure that. It doesn't matter if, oh, well, there was more than enough. You didn't measure it.
How do you know?
Yeah. You already moved the model. There's no way for you or I to confirm. And the judge has to sit there and rule upon that. If you, if I'm sitting there calling it all the time, then there's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it doesn't take that long to get one of the keys out and go, hey, I have 3 inches here. I'm good. You know, just a couple seconds. So far, so good. Anything else?
Speaking of going to tournaments,
yes.
Now I've got some advice that I kind of go by.
Yeah.
I mean, feel free to disagree if you think. I would say, especially for a newer player, do not go into this whole analysis paralysis trying to.
Oh my God.
Just, I mean, you're there. Just kind of, if it's kind of one or the other, go with your gut, and go.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And you can go back and double think the decision later. But pick one and go with it, and you can learn from it.
Oh, yeah.
Especially, that's where I'm trying to put my headspace, is even a tournament, I'm there mostly to play high-quality games and learn.
Yeah.
So, pick a strategy, go with it, see what happens.
Oh, yeah.
And if nothing else, it takes the clock out of your concern. You don't have to sit there like, now you're trying to pick an avenue of attack and defense, and you got the clock counting down on you, and it all falls apart.
Extra stress on top of you because that clock is just keeps ticking away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's something that I've told a lot of our players is, you know, start playing on the clock as early as you can because it forces you to sit there and make those decisions. I sat there when I was getting ready to learn how to play Death Clock. I put a Death Clock out and played against it, kept timing myself out all the time. So one of our vets, I believe it was Edge, told me, he's like, set up another clock and set up a 5 or 7 minute timer. Play time turns for that format. And really, that forced me, because it was a thing of, you know, for that, at Mark II, that point level, you had 7 minute turns.
Yep.
And you had to get everything done in that 7 minutes. And that was it. And you're like, okay, well, you know, Death Clock gave you this luxury of, oh, I have 60 minutes I could spend. But when you put yourself on that time turns, it's like, oh my God, I only have some. It really forces it. And you,
it does.
This is how out of it I am. Is hardcore still a thing?
No.
No.
Ah.
You have Champions, Masters, and Steamroller.
Nah.
Champs is ADR casters only. Masters is the whole enchilada. I don't believe Specialists is actually a rule in Champs anymore. And Masters, it's a optional. They can add it to it if they wanted to. But yeah, Analysis Paralysis is one of the big tournament killers for people. We have a couple people in the meta that, you know, are still struggling with it. And to them, I keep telling them, make a decision, go with it, learn from it, re-rack.
The thing I've always done to start is, at the very least, like, on your opponent's turn, about halfway through, start making your game plan. Have just, like, the generic. It's like, I want to try and kill this, this, and this.
Yeah.
Or I want to try and take this zone. And as their turn continues, if that becomes less and less plausible, tweak it.
Yep.
Don't just try and make the entire plan after you see what your opponent does. Work on it as they are working on their turn.
Yep.
If you plan on going on a big model, but your opponent just took off the model you wanted to send in, okay, scrap that plan. Either scrap it or readjust with another model nearby.
Yep.
But don't start thinking about your turn on your clock.
Yep.
Think of it on your opponent's turn, on your opponent's clock. Be courteous and look up your opponent's stats. So you're not, like we said previously, that way you're not breaking their concentration. But just the sooner you start thinking about your turn on your opponent's turn, the less you're going to run into that analysis paralysis.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And really, you have to... One of the things I've had to tell people a lot is you're not going to kill everything in a turn.
No.
You're not going to score all the points in a turn. You got to prioritize what you need to do that turn. And Edge and Jake taught me a while ago of these, you know, and, you know, I got to give big props to Chuck Collins because he really helped me to refine this is, what are you doing this turn? What is your goal? Are you scoring points? Are you killing the caster? Are you just trying to hold pat? What is it you're actually trying to achieve in this turn? If you're just sitting there throwing stuff forward and keep pushing forward, you're just going to feed your army to the opponent and you're not really going to get anything.
Well, at least say you're trying to force the line of engagement further to their side of the board to have better control over zones.
Yeah, but that's very general.
That's very general. At least also,
BS it a little bit.
It's something you don't have to do.
Yeah,
you can you can force the point of, depending upon how terrain is set up, you can force the line of engagement on your half of the table. But if you're controlling that half and still controlling the zones, you don't need to move forward.
Yep. Right.
You can play a melee-centric army that, if the terrain is perfect, your opponent's shooting army has to get within charge range to be able to see your models.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not just that. I mean, my game with Jake last night was a perfect example. He scored first, 2 points. I got up in there, and I scored 2 points after him and stopped him from scoring. On his turn, he cleared out the zone, scored 2 points again, and prevented me from scoring my 2 points. So he's at 4-2. On my turn, I'm sitting there trying to do the same. I fail. And so he's able to sit there and score his last 2 points, going up, what was it, he scored an extra point on my turn.
And then he went,
he just needed 2 more points to win. But it was a thing of, he was controlling his edge of the table, and he got to score first, and he sat there and really put the pressure on me. And so, with that, he was playing mostly on his side of the board, just kept throwing a couple of dudes or a few girls into the zone, just to keep stopping me.
The sooner you learn to control your territory and the no man's land is when you start winning games. You don't need to worry about your opponent's territory. Forget taking that over.
Yeah.
But if you're able to control your territory, no man's land, and continue to push that no man's land further and further into your opponent's territory, then that's when you start winning.
And, you know, target priority is a thing because of the fact that you can't kill everything. A lot of guys will sit there and get analysis paralysis because they're trying to kill everything else, But when in fact they only needed to kill three different models.
Or a cripple, instead of trying to destroy that one heavy, it's just, no, you just got to cripple it to the point where it's neutered next turn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where, you know, a couple of points or a free strike gets them off the table.
I mean, you could, like, oh, that Jack was left with five boxes, but it was all in column, whatever column it is, for movement and cortex.
Yeah.
Well, that Jack's not doing anything to your model next turn. So, no point in putting extra attacks into it to kill it when you can focus into other things and maybe crippling those.
Yeah.
Or shooting off the targets that are within threat range of the thing you sent out there to kill that Jack. Now your opponent literally has no way of retaliating to you crippling that Jack. You finish that off next turn and you keep continue to sweep.
I mean, if you take a look at a scenario like Mirage, Mirage has three flags on it.
Mm-hmm.
You kill all their solos, they have no scoring elements.
Their caster has to walk up to do it.
The caster. Yeah. And if you sit there and they bring a whole bunch of units, you know they can score the circle zones, but they can't score those flags. But you can, if you have solos.
Mm-hmm.
You can sit there and destroy their objective. And most of the single wound infantry, there's ways to control them.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to kill them all. You just have to control them. Like, you know, one of the things I've started playing around with is how to deal with ambushers.
Mm-hmm.
Ambushers really skew what can happen on the table. Last night, I think I played one of the best games I've ever played against someone with ambushers. And the ambushers came in. I was not expecting my skin and bones to survive. With most of a main unit of girls, blood witches attacking him, but he survived. I was planning on him dying and then the rattler going through and chewing through them. But with him surviving, it was now my turn. Go, okay, what do I do? I got the rattler, ate the girls around, and then took the one the skin and bones that was hurt, and was able to really hold his own a lot longer. Just by doing that, I scored on my second turn. Or not my second turn, my third turn. I was able to score. Because of the way it was set up. I didn't have to kill all of his army. I just had to kill five girls. Or six girls.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, analysis paralysis is very, very good to try and work out early.
Yeah. And really, if you're learning and you're looking for tips off a podcast, especially from someone like me, really, you're listening to me, what are the odds staring at it for 10, 15, 20 minutes is actually going to give you the right answer?
Yeah.
Just
the only time you should be spending that much time looking at the board state is if you're looking at an assassination and it's your only option.
Well, then why are you looking at it? If that's your only option, go for it.
Yeah.
I mean,
if you're looking at it, you should be pre-measuring it out, dropping proxy bases, bringing on everything you have to do, measuring it out, getting the order of activations right in your head. And that's...
And then flip to those order of activations, and your entire plan goes kaput.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And you have to learn that lesson. There's nothing going to teach you that lesson other than failing.
So I guess that's an interesting point, is to make the difference between the analysis paralysis as opposed to planning your chosen course of action.
Yeah. I mean, it's a thing of, if I can tell anyone a piece of advice to help them just get, you know, into the game more, just get off the pot.
Yep.
Just do it. Just get, do whatever it is you're going to do. And figure it out from there. Take notes. Write down, okay, I went over here and this didn't work. And that's why our meta is really good, because, you know, a lot of our vets will sit there and go, okay, you died there. Let's rewind it a little bit. Let's go put you here. What would happen?
And you learn a lot more from failures than you do from successes.
Absolutely.
Yep. I mean, you're not going to jump into this game and go, ah, I am a superstar. I kick butt all over the place. No, you're going to come into this game going, okay, I got a good grasp of the rules. Holy crap.
Oh, that's this how that happened. Works.
Yeah, this happened. That happened. What happened here? Oh, I didn't even think about that.
Oh, I thought Mat 5 was awesome. I was mistaken.
You know, the stats are there to help and hinder you, and it's an open information game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that I tell a lot of people. I spend, this may be TMI, but when I get onto Porcelain Throne, I'm in War Room reading cards or putting lists together.
That's
or
usually what I'm doing.
Rules. Just to sit there and just keep up with the amount of information that there's out there.
Yeah.
I pretty much will, at times, pick a model from any faction, read through the rules, try and find combinations of, like, okay, what works with this model? What doesn't? What doesn't it like to see? What does it like to see? And just try and figure, just try and build that puzzle.
Yeah.
In my head, so when I see that model, I know what I need to do.
Or what it can do against you. And then you sit there and go, okay, well, it can do this. And then you play against a person and they don't take advantage of it and go, oh, well, okay, well, now I know exactly what it can do. I know that they didn't do it, so therefore, I have the upper hand.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good thing to think about and really go into. So, here we are at the end of the podcast. Jonesy, Tuesday night, you going to get some games in?
That's the plan.
That's not the plan. That's what you will do.
Come on, man. You got to get in there.
Yes, yes.
And then, Jerry, you'll be back on Tuesday.
I'll be back on Tuesday with my Crucible Guard.
Yep.
Locke and Silvestro.
Fully painted.
Oh, hell no. I wish I could do that in that amount of time, but no, I cannot.
Yeah, just play all Jacks. It's easy.
That's the lock list, for the most part. And you can't, you really can't do that. You need the Dragonfire Rockets.
Yeah.
Pretty much every one of my lists is like one or two Dragonfire Rockets, and the rest of the list.
Yeah. And then for myself, we're going to record the bonusode with Wes Roller on our way up to Cleveland, North Olmsted. So I'll put that out as soon as I can get that edited. And then Tuesday, some more playtime. Grimkin, Old Witch, King of Nothing. Fun times. And then Tuesday, we'll be playing back. And then Wednesday, we'll get back together and record another session.
Yep. Go over my first few games of Crucible Guard and how badly I lose.
It's all right. For me, we sat there and we recorded an episode with Edge. And the episode kind of tanked on us. So next Wednesday, we're going to record with Edge again and hopefully not have it go south on us. So hopefully between now and then, we all get some good games. Jonesy.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Get some games.
All right.
Some games. Nothing else. Friday night, I don't think I have anything planned. Call me.
All
right. And then, other than that, I think that's a wrap for tonight. I'm Mike.
I'm Jerry.
I'm Aaron.
All right. Have a good night, everyone.
Toodles.